honorable members, our guests who will be presenting to us today, members of the press who are here, members of civil society, citizens of our country, let me welcome all of you to the second session of the meeting of the Portfolio Committee on International Relations. This morning we dealt with the annual report of the department and the report of the Auditor General, looking in-depthly at the performance of the Department of International Relations in carrying out its mandate. This session will deal with or will look into the question of Palestine, in particular its application for statehood at the United Nations. Hopefully it's not my... No, it's not my fault. Now, honorable members, we have invited a number of people and organizations to give us a briefing about the issues around the Palestinian application for statehood. We have invited the Palestinian representative. We've invited the Israeli ambassador. We have invited the COSATU representative. We've also invited the ECOSA, the Egyptian community in South Africa. We've also invited Open Shuhada Street, an NGO that engages, that remains seized as well with this matter. Now, firstly, let me disappoint you first. Let me start with the disappointing news. The disappointing news, honorable members, is that neither the Israeli ambassador nor the Palestinian representatives can attend today's meeting. There has been a communication breakdown between the embassy and our office here in Parliament. In the case of the Israeli ambassador, we have extended an invitation to the ambassador. The ambassador declined because of what is supposedly short notice. Now, I want to put the following on the record, honorable members, that an invitation was sent to His Excellency the ambassador. The response from his office was that the ambassador is not available because of Jewish holidays, and that we should engage with the deputy ambassador who would make the presentation or the briefing to the committee. We did that. We, in fact, were specifically requested to direct an invitation to the deputy ambassador on top of the initial one. We complied. We did that. 2 days ago, we were informed by the embassy that the deputy ambassador cannot make it because of short notice. Now, let me put the following on the record, that it is my considered view, honorable members, that the Israeli embassy is not doing itself a favor, because I think it has robbed itself of an opportunity to engage on the issues from their perspective. It would have been very good to hear what their perspective is on the matter. A concern was raised by Honorable Mukhala by some point about the fact that when the Palestinian representative, Mr. Barghouti, made a presentation to the committee, or gave the committee a briefing, that the Israeli side wasn't given an opportunity to do so. Now, we have done so this time around. Unfortunately, I'm still giving an opportunity to finish. So I think that's one. So I want to put that first on the record. However, honorable members, seeing that both of these critical role players are not here, I think it would be prim and proper for us to give them an opportunity at a later stage, our program permitting, to state their views. I think it would be important for us to hear both their views as a committee. I think that is the underlying principle. So if any of them for some reason cannot make it, we will not be able to hold back our committee's program for that reason. Secondly, honorable members, or lastly, needless to say, so we will hear the perspectives of the different role players today. Now, let me clarify the following. We have COSATU here. Now, before somebody asks why is Solidarity not here, let me answer that question. It's because COSATU wrote the correspondence, and in fact they had a march to Parliament about 2 months ago or so, and wrote a correspondence to my office for giving their perspective on the particular matter. So that's one. Two, the ICOSA also wrote the correspondence to me, and in fact came to see me in my office and raised a number of issues with respect to this particular matter. Thirdly, Open Shahuda Street is a local NGO that is doing work on the ground in Palestine with a clear perspective of what is happening within Palestine, and as such, as a local civil society organization, they are in a better position to give us a perspective of what is happening on the ground. So I thought I should just clarify that. Honorable members, the issue of Palestine has been a matter that has been dogging the world for many years, for over 60 years. this is a matter on which our country has on numerous occasions, or at least our government, has taken very clear positions. The matter today is serving in front of the United Nations system. There's expected outcomes and implications either way. It is important, I think, for this committee to engage on this matter and express a clear voice or a clear position on this issue, which, in my view at least, is probably the moral issue of the century. It is very important, honourable members, that we engage on this particular matter, from a perspective of the lessons of our own experiences as a country and as a people. And so, when we move forward, we must also move forward clearly, being sensitive to the permeating issues around this particular situation, but also clear and take the moral high ground as members of parliament in the manner in which we engage, but also in terms of how we pronounce in the final analysis, because it can't be that this parliament is quiet when such a defining issue is really taking place elsewhere in the world. Now, let me just raise this issue. I raised this matter earlier this morning around the deal brokered by Egypt around the release of Gilad Shalit and in exchange for about 1,027 Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails. But this is about 1,027 of more than 5,200 Palestinians living languishing in Israeli jails, of course, of which about 202 have never been charged. Now, so honorable members, while that in itself is an important step, but this has happened in the past. There have been prisoner exchanges in the past. I think to us the fundamental issue must be, to what extent does that influence the trajectory moving forward in terms of resolving the final status issues and leading to the creation of two states living side by side and in peace? Because we know, honorable members, and you don't need me to tell you, that the only solution that really will bring peace to that part of the world is the creation of a Palestinian state living side by side and in peace with Israel. That is a necessary precondition. So what is important for us, at least from this experience, is perhaps the encouragement that if deals can be struck around these issues, it offers hope and encouragement that the parties may perhaps use that as a springboard to move towards each other around finding a lasting solution to the problems afflicting Palestine. Especially, I prefer to use the phrase in resolving the Palestinian grievance. Honorable members, without much ado, let me... okay. Noted.
Thank you. Thank you for putting those important things on record. Can I also just plead that added to that record is that this important committee briefing was set on the eve of the Jewish holiday of Sukkot, also when the Israeli ambassador is out of the country. So we didn't check our facts in terms of, and if we had done that to other parties, they would have taken it as an offense. And also just, I'm glad you explained why Kusatu is here, because also not a week or so ago, Friends of Israel protested and delivered a memorandum outside of Parliament here, and I don't see them here today. If you could put that on record as well, thank you.
Okay.
Just to add to the issues that you have raised, because you have asked us to attend a meeting on Monday. Unfortunately, not a lot of the members could be here because it's a party day. But on Monday there was the meeting that we had with Mr. What is his name? Jaffa Farah. And I think that the documentation that he has left must also be handed in for the committee. There's a number of booklets and so on that he has left, and essentially he wanted to talk to us about the aspect of what happens to those Arabs that are living in Israel if a one-state solution is going to be given, and he came to sort some assistance from South Africa on that question. But there are booklets here, Chair. He has promised to send an email, and it said that he wanted the committee or some members, I don't know if it's all or whatever, he will have said that in his email, to come and witness for ourselves on the ground in, I don't know if it's both Israel and Palestine, to come and witness that. So he was going to send an email in that regard to do that. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much. Honorable members, let me clarify two things. You see, one, with regard to the Jewish holiday. You see, if the Israeli embassy had not indicated the availability of their deputy ambassador to attend the meeting, then that would have been something else. The ambassador wasn't available, so they indicated that the deputy would be available. And only 2 days ago indicated that the deputy is not available. So it's not about getting the facts straight, it's about them being upfront about their availability or not to attend this meeting. I guess that's the point. Secondly, the issue of the Friends of Israel, honorable member, I have not received a correspondence or a communique from them. Had they sent me a communique, I would have done with them what I did with the rest of the others who sent communiques. So if they had a match, they had a match, and I don't know who they handed their memorandum to. But what I cannot do, honorable members, is to go around, snoop around Parliament and ask people, have you received a memorandum in relation to this issue that's going to be discussed in the portfolio committee? I can't do that. So I can only deal with matters that land on my table. So in this instance, honorable Dudley, I hope you will appreciate that I received correspondences from these organizations, and that is why, you know, we have them here today. Those I don't know, I can't answer anything for them. Then lastly, Honorable September, I am not aware of a meeting with Mr. Jaffa, and I have not invited you to any meeting. I bear no knowledge of that. In fact, when we spoke earlier, didn't you see my confusion? I wanted to know more about what it was about. I really don't know anything about that such a correspondence or, you know, request for a meeting or so. Thank you. Do you want to say something?
No, just to chair then really what needs to be done is we probably should just investigate, because it would not be not right to use your name. It's a person from IDASA that says that has been working with Turco.
Okay.
On this thing. So I think outside of the meeting,
okay.
You can investigate.
Let's
put
it outside of the meeting, yeah. No, thank you so much. Okay, honorable members, that out of the way, we will at this point call the COSATU representative, Mr. Tahir, I believe, to please give us a briefing. Now, let me just, for the benefit of all of the people who will be presenting, request that you, to the extent that you can, what you want to do is to deal with the presentation and engagement on the presentation within 45 minutes. So if you could keep your presentation, you know, reasonably within 20 to 25 minutes, that will allow us some time to engage. Thank you. The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, honorable members, for giving us this opportunity to address the portfolio committee. My presentation would not be too long. I plan to keep it as brief as possible. I do understand the honorable members have been engaging on this issue before we had walked in. As I start, I would like to start with the words, an injury to one is an injury to all. And this is why the Federation COSATU is engaging itself on this question. We have met a number of visiting delegations from both sides of this conflict, and a number of them had one very important message to say to us, and that is the world is looking and counting on South Africa to liberate Palestinians. It is quite clear that the Palestinian case is quite similar to the apartheid condition that we had experienced, and this is why they are looking to South Africa for guidance so that we can assist in this regard. Just to talk a little bit about the problem, the State of Israel, as we know, is a settler colonial state established in Palestine. It has occupied Palestinian land so that it can house a settler society. In so doing, the native population has become dispossessed of their right to self-determination and property rights. The laws of the State of Israel give preferential treatment to the settler communities in terms of land ownership, housing, water, all types of resources, freedom of movement, education, job opportunities, health services, and the list can go on and on. These settlers are defined by law as Jews. Non-Jews are discriminated against, same as in apartheid South Africa. This is clear, honorable members. The state's material and welfare resources are denied to the Arab Palestinians. This we have seen with our own eyes. We have sent a number of delegations to Palestine, and I myself have also been there and witnessed it firsthand. Apart from COSATU, the alliance in general has sent a number of delegations to Palestine, and they've all witnessed the exact same treatment. Today, Palestinians are confined and separated by an apartheid wall. This is it. It's called an apartheid wall. Travel in and out of these Bantustans are controlled by more than 650 checkpoints. No exaggeration, 650 checkpoints and roadblocks. $450 is spent per student on Israeli students with regards to education, but only $128 are spent on Arab Israeli students. I ask you, honorable members, is this not Bantu education? Honorable members, the Palestinian statehood bid is indeed a form of diplomatic resistance in a larger struggle. Parliament must back the Palestinian right to self-determination. We have had a number of meetings, and this is what we are concerning ourselves primarily with, self-determination, most important concept to us, and efforts to reach a viable state for, by, and of all the people of Palestine, including the majority who find themselves in the diaspora and refugee camps. Whether the United Nations will grant statehood or not, the crucial question, honorable members, to COSATU and must be the same to Parliament, is whether the Israeli occupation and oppression of Palestinians will end. Violence, will it end? This is what we need to concern ourselves with. A state under occupation and continued Israeli aggression amounts to nothing more, I'll say it again, than a Bantustan, and does not automatically translate into freedom and self-rule for Palestinians. As our Palestinian comrades have constantly said, recognition at the UN is only part of the broader struggle. Until Palestinians are completely free, solidarity with the Palestinian people and resistance to Israeli oppression must continue. Honorable members, we must pledge our support for the following basic principles articulated by Palestinian political and civil society organizations and several long-standing UN resolutions. Number one, ending the Israeli occupation and colonization of all Palestinian lands and dismantling the Israeli apartheid wall. Recognizing the fundamental rights of the Palestinian citizens of Israel to full equality. Respecting, protecting, and promoting the rights of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes and properties. These are non-negotiables, honorable members. An immediate end to Israel's illegal settlements and blockade on Gaza, and an end to Israel's discriminatory and racist policies. Parliament must also allow differing views to filter into discussions. Each view must be deconstructed and judged based on its merits. Perhaps Parliament must consider setting up a task team of some sort to look through differing views and to hammer out the details of our support. We do know now that we have a position of some sort, the UN state bid, two state, but now we need to hammer out our support. And as I mentioned, or as I stated, the seven items I had listed must be non-negotiable, whatever the deal might be, one state, two state. But there are certain preconditions that we must not let go of and that we must demand that we would like to see. And those are the seven that I listed. In line with this, it is also important to call for the intensification of the struggle. particularly the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign against Israel. As our own anti-apartheid struggle had demonstrated, this is an effective, non-violent form of resistance that can bring an end to injustice and contribute immensely to liberation. Honorable members, what has also been embarrassingly exposed during the Palestinian bid for statehood is the United States' hypocrisy and double standards. The USA claims to support democracy in the Middle East by using its military power purportedly to enforce UN resolutions. However, the same USA has used its veto power at the UN Security Council, believe it or not, 41 times veto power in defense of the apartheid state of Israel and against Palestinian rights, thus effectively frustrating the enforcement of any UN resolution. As COSATU, we welcome the strong South African government stance on this issue. South Africans and the democratic South African government have a moral duty, as the Honorable Chairperson said, to stand with the Palestinian people and all other just struggles around the world. Back to what I said, an injury to one is an injury to all. In conclusion, and just to reiterate one more time, it is not just about the UN statehood, but also about ensuring that there is justice, peace, and land distribution for the vulnerable Palestinians that have suffered for far too long now. We must ensure that these points are not lost and become part of any deal promoting lasting peace. Thank you, Honorable Members. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tahir. Honorable Members, we have an opportunity now to engage with the issues raised, any questions, clarity, comments, and so on what Mr. Tahir said. Yes.
Should we not hear all the presenters and then put our questions?
Okay, there's a proposal that we do that. Second it. Okay, it is popular. Let's do that. Okay, shall we then have Ikosa presenting to us? Thank you.
Honorable Chairman, Honorable Members, thank you so much for allowing us the opportunity to come here and present to you. My name is Hamid Behairi. I come from Egypt. I'm the spokesperson of the Egyptian community of South Africa. I have a few colleagues with me here today. Two of them are actually from Palestine itself. The statehood proposal submitted by Palestine to the United Nations recently is a historic moment that if we fail, and I'm talking person to person, not on a government basis, not on a political basis, but I'm talking on a human being basis, if we fail to let this country have its own right of having its own statehood, so we have failed as human beings. Let's start. There is nothing better to start this discussion better than the wording of our hero, Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela is not a hero of South Africa. Nelson Mandela is a hero of the whole globe. There was a research that said if there is one president who would be the president of the whole world, who this person might be? And this was this gentleman from Eastern Cape. This gentleman, his exact words were, We know too well that our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinians. this is not coming from a layman person. This is coming from a person who sacrificed his whole life for humanity. He didn't sacrifice his whole life for South Africans only, because he is not a South African hero, he is a global hero. That's the first starting point. Desmond Tutu, the Nobel Prize laureate, what did he say when he visited Palestine? I am a black South African, and if I were to change the names, a description of what is happening in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank could describe events in South Africa. The statement is quite clear. More than that, the Human Science Research Council in South Africa has conducted a thorough research whether the state of Israel represents an apartheid state. And this thorough research conducted by the HSRC and researchers from South Africa, from England, from Europe, from the States, and from Israel itself, they concluded that the state of Israel is an apartheid state. And this is back in 2007 report, Occupation, Colonialism, and Apartheid. And the three pillars of apartheid are very clear in the state of Israel. And I really invite you to read at least the executive summary of this exhaustive research in order to find out about it and see how the state of Israel can be clearly defined as an apartheid state. Just very few wording from this research. Israel has appropriated land and water in the Palestinian territories. Merge the Palestinian economy with Israel's economy. And you have seen it now. You want to have your own state? Are you going to have your own proposal? Your taxes will not be paid to you. Your own taxes from your own people will not be paid to you. $4 billion. Impose a system of domination over Palestinians to ensure their subjugation to these measures. Israel has denied the indigenous population the right to self-determination, and so on. You can read it, and I promise you, it's an excellent read. So, what's the conclusion? There is nothing better than this picture, and please keep it at the back of your mind. This picture has been drawn by a South African, showing his own griefness and how much it is linked to Palestinians. And you can see this black lady tapping the shoulder of this Palestinian lady, telling her, sweetheart, it will be sorted, because it has been sorted for us. By the way, our problem is never, ever with Judaism. It's never with Judaism. It's exactly the contrary. As Palestinians, Muslims, and Palestinian Christians, there is huge respect for the religion. But our main problem is in the coming slide. The coming slide is Judaism rejects Zionism. That's completely different, and this must be very clear in our message. Our message is not about Judaism. Our message is about Zionism. And Zionism, which started in 1897 as an ideology, in the Basel meeting in Switzerland by Judith Herzl, he said very, very clearly that Palestine is a land without people for people without land. So from the first moment of Zionism, they said that this land is without people. So we are denying you, as Palestinians, the right to say that this is our land from day one of Zionism. All right. Why should Palestinians have a state now? Well, okay, that's all fine. You told us that Israel is an apartheid state. But, okay, why should Palestinians be granted a land called the State of Palestine? Let's have a look. There is a very interesting United Nations Security Council resolution in 1967, and it is resolution number 242. Because all of us here, we are in the international and foreign relations and foreign cooperation and international cooperation, so we are bound to these measures. Let's read what this measure told us. Inadmissibility of the acquisition of territory by war and the need to work for just and lasting peace in the Middle East, which every state in the area can live in security. Okay, nice wording. But let's go a little bit more to the two points that has been defined in this research. Number one, withdrawal of Israeli armed forces from the territories occupied in the recent conflict, that's in 1967. That is a United Nations resolution. Please go out of this occupied area. Number two, termination of all claims or states of belligerency and respect for an acknowledgement of the sovereignty, territorial integrity, and political independence of every state in the area, and their right to live in peace within secure and recognized boundaries free from threats or acts of force. You know what's happening? You know how Israel went out from this resolution up until today? It's the word should before these two sentences. There is the word should. Can you see it in the third line there? The word should has been taken by Israel as not must. So telling someone you should do this is different from telling someone you must do that. And that's how they escaped from this resolution and other resolutions since then. It's not only from the Security Council, by the way. It's also from the United Nations General Assembly. That's in 1974. Interestingly, it's also in November. So the other one was in November 1976, this one in November 1974, and hopefully in November 2011, we will see the state of Palestine. What did they say? Reaffirms. They are saying reaffirms the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people in Palestine, including the right to self-determination without external interference and the right to national independence and sovereignty. These are not the words of Palestinian people. This is the word of the United Nations, the whole world. How come now you say no state for Palestine after this wording? All right. Now, another reason. Israel's admission to the United Nations itself, when Israel was admitted as a state in the United Nations, they said very clearly, sympathetic consideration to consider Israel for admission. Read these two words clearly, please. Sympathetic. I'm asking you, not honorable members, not respectful politicians, I'm asking you as human beings, don't you feel any sympathy for these people? Please answer this question very quietly between you and yourself. Another reason. Already 128 countries worldwide recognize the state of Palestine, and they accept the two-state solution, representing 75% of the whole population of the whole world. They say, we accept the state of Palestine. So it's not because the United States is threatening to veto this that the whole world should remain silent about it. By the way, Nelson Mandela didn't have a veto right in order to free Palestine, in order to free South Africa. He didn't have the veto. He didn't have the arms. He had the will, and he had the justness. That is what I'm talking about. Justice. Justice will prevail no matter what. Justice will prevail no matter what. Whether there is nuclear weapons, whether there is force, whether there is separation, justice will come. Sooner or later. And I'm not talking by force, I'm talking by just the justice. And we are here in South Africa, in this land, in this free land now, talking, and we have the privilege that we are all sitting in a free country now. This message to the whole world from this place, from this very place, that used to be the apartheid place, and now it is the free parliament of the South African country. We have the privilege and the pride to say to the whole world, we demand a free and statehood for these Palestinian people. This is a nonviolent action. So if we are showing our support, we are not showing our support to somebody holding a nuclear weapon and threatening others. We are showing our support for a nonviolent action. And this nonviolent action has been stated by many, many wise people all over the world to be the end of the conflict in the Middle East. That solution is the end of the conflict of the Middle East. And a very honorable representative of South Africa in the United Nations Council, she said this same exact words. this will be the end of the conflict in the Middle East, and we all understand it. So why not? Palestine has met all the prerequisites of statehood listed in the 1933 Montevideo Convention in Uruguay and the United Nations membership requirements. So from a legal perspective, there is no problem at all. It's all a political game. It's all a political damn game, unfortunately. It's all a damn political game, and that's all. The Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, he said these exact words. He said, the peace process is, of course, working in our advantage because we are gaining time. And you will understand what I say by gaining time in the very last slide. We are gaining time. We are gaining time. And I promise you, now they say the four-party coalition proposal in order to have a final solution for the state of Palestine next year. And the whole world say, yes, that's awesome. Let's have this four-party from Europe and the States and Russia and whatever would like to participate in having this tri-party or four-party solution. By the way, this has been happening for 6 decades, my friend. This has been, and there is many promises. This one-year promise has been made by George Bush, has been made by Clinton, has been made by Barack Obama now. So stop joking and stop laughing to the whole world, because this is a laugh. So if any person here who is opposing the Palestinian cause, please, please respect the words that you are saying when you say that there is an entry into negotiation, there is no state that can be formed without negotiation, and what Hillary Clinton said, that the decision shouldn't be in New York, it must be in Ramallah and in Tel Aviv. All of this is damn political games to gain more time. And any incident, and they will push it, they will just throw fire in petrol, and then, oh, we have a problem, we cannot have a peace process now, please wait for the coming 5-10 years. And then we have a new government in Israel. Sorry, we cannot enter into this. We cannot respect other people. And the political game will never have an end. In 2011, April, that is? Few days, not few months, few days down the line. What did the IMF say? Palestinians are able to perform as a well-functioning state. Keep it as a message. It can perform as a well-functioning state. The statehood proposal does not violate any, and I repeat, any signed agreement between Palestine and Israel at all. So there is no violation of anything. So give me a reason why you are denying this now. Again, to gain time. Damn political game. The statehood proposal does not delegitimize the state of Israel. We are not saying demolish Israel. We are saying we would like to live in peace. Let's have two states to live in peace. When Nelson Mandela came out of the prison, what did he say, the first few words? It's time to heal our wounds. Aren't these his exact words? It wouldn't have been the case if he is still in the prison. He can't be in the prison saying it's the time to heal our wounds. He is a free person now saying let's heal our wounds. Give these people the freedom, the statehood, let's enrich them, and then we can ask for, let's heal our wounds. Palestine support entering into final peace negotiation with Israel, but as a sovereign state this time. So we are not saying stop the negotiation, it's exactly the opposite. But we are saying let's speak face to face as two sovereign states meeting each other. So let's have a cup of coffee together as two states. Not, I am your occupied nation, and let's talk about peace now. It's completely different. The only struggling nation in the whole world now is still Palestine. Aren't we ashamed of ourselves as human beings again? I'm not saying South Africans. I'm not saying politicians. I'm not saying people wearing fancy suits and fancy ties and rich people and business people. I'm talking about human beings. Aren't we ashamed of ourselves keeping this struggling nation up until this moment? The only nation in the whole world that's still struggling on a daily basis? Have you tried asking yourself what is the hardship of these people in Gaza? Here is someone who has been there. Here is someone who has been there. Here is someone who has been there. They can show you now, if you have the time, if you have the time and the desire to see, they can show you the daily life of these people in Gaza and how it looks like. But we are bound by the time, and I'm up to finish my presentation. If you would like, here is a gentleman from Palestine. He can show it to you if you have the time and if you are interested in knowing. Even if Americans veto this time, even if they say, and they played it very smartly. They said, no, I'm not going to veto. Let's send it for some legal opinion. Check how politics is running. Let's send it for some legal opinion, because Saudi Arabia said it's a damn problem if you veto this one this time and some other countries. So it's not my problem. The legal opinion gives me this opinion. Awesome. So even if they veto it this time, we are going to reapply and reapply again and apply again. And it happened. Japan applied many times. Ireland applied many times. Portuguese applied many times until they had it. Here it is. You remember when I said they are just playing the time game? That's it. Do you see this green? Green is Palestine. White is Israel. The first one is in 1946. The second one is in 1947. Then it is until 1967. This is the third one. And in 2000, that's what you see. Pockets of land called Palestine. What we are asking now is to go back to the 1967 what borders. These 1967 borders that you see in the third line is the requested land to be given to Palestine now. And check where they came from in the first picture. Check where they came from. And all what they are asking is the 1967. And check what Israel is doing. Israel, despite the fact that they have awesome pieces of land elsewhere, no. They want to build their settlement in your territory. Where? In your territory. But, my friends, you have other land. No. I want to build here. That's my settlement. And you have other territories that is also arable, and that is also having some water features, and that's also fine to have. No, my friend. I'm coming in your backyard. I'm sitting here. Here is my settlement. And every week we hear about settlement. Where? In Jerusalem. In order to make it no deal, to gain time, shame on every human being. And the last one is, these are the green countries supporting the state of Palestine. You see the whole world almost in front of you now here. And the rest, they are playing the game of politics. And I promise you, if you ask an average American whether he would support the state of Palestine, let's hear what they would have said. But I'm telling you that if you are asking for peace, you will get the support of any human being. Maybe not the support of a politician, but the support of a human being. What I'm asking South Africa from this place here is you, South Africa, is extremely, extremely strong. Why? Because you came from the same position and saying to the whole world, guys, we were also during apartheid and we went free and we want this land to be also free. These guys are suffering just like us. And it's a shame, I repeat, it's a shame if we let it go this time. How will you describe this to your sons and daughters? What did you do, daddy, as a politician? Didn't you have the mic to speak to the world? What did you do? Did you play the politics game? Or you have been honest with yourself and your fellow human beings? Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you. Shall we, let's have the last presentation. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Mugabe. Let's have the last presentation from Mr. Ahmad.
Chair, we're going to divide our time between three of us, if we may, with your permission. Thank you.
Good afternoon to everyone. Thanks for the time. Quickly, I will get into the point. I will introduce what is Open Trader Street. Open Trader Street is a South African-based initiative to raise awareness about the lack of freedom of movement in Hebron and how this issue is a reflection of the greater injustice of the ongoing occupation of Palestinian territories. We stand for full civil and political rights for all Palestinians and all Israelis. We support the two states under the creation of a Palestinian state within the 1967 borders, with East Jerusalem as its capital. We stand for solidarity with Israelis and Palestinians activists working for human rights and justice. We are against violence and against of all kinds of racism, including anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. What is Ahava? We have the campaign that is called Ahava campaign, which we are pushing. Ahava is a line of product that we market yobuhle for ukuba ebusuku ukuba ebusweni yenziwe ngeminerals ezisuka kulwandle elibizwa ngento kokubana yi Dead Sea. Yaye eyona ngxaki into kokubana iahava iduru kakhulu, it is very expensive. Ngubani othengisa iahava? Iahava importwa okanye iziswa kweli lizwe sikulo yi-FDV Pharmaceuticals. Iahava ithengiswa zivengile eziliqela, kodwa ke kweli ithengiswa yivengile ebizwa intobana i-Wellness Warehouse kunye no-Truworths. Zizo esisazifumeneyo kwangoku ezithengisa iahava. Iahava kwakhona ayinazo ivengile ezikhombe ngqo apha eMzantsi Afrika ukuthi apha yindawo ethengisa kuphela iahava. Ngubani owenza iahava? Kukhona ikhampani ebizwa ngento kokubana i-Dead Sea Laboratories Limited. I-CEO yayo nguYakov Ellis. Oxokisele abantu okanye abathengi athi iahava yenziwa e-Israel. Shortly, eyona nto esiyimelayo kwiahava nebangela into yokokubana sibe nomsindo ngakwiahava sithi mayekwe yinto yokokubana iahava ine-label ebubuxoki. I-label ethi iahava yenziwa e-Israel, however iahava isenziwa kumhlaba owohluthiweyo okanye othatyathiweyo wamaPalestina, meaning i-occupied territory land ye-Palestinians. Zimbini iinkampani ezenza iahava. Eyokuqala yi-Mispah Shalem, yona e-owner i-37.31%. Ibe ikhaliya yona e-owner u-7.38%. Eyona nto ke ingamandla yinto yokokubana ukwenziwa kweahava kwenza into yokuba kube ngumqobo woxolo ukwenzeka kwelaa lizwe phakathi kwamapalestine namasirayeli. Ithabatha amanzi wamapalestina. Okwesibini, kuvalwa indlela. Okwesithathu, abona bantu banengeniso only the Israelis. I-Palestinians azinanzuzo ziyifumanayo ngeproduct eyenziwa kwilizwe labo. And I quote, Article 49, paragraph of 6 of the 4th Geneva Convention states, the occupying power shall not deport or transfer part of its own civilian population into the territory it occupies. Secondly, I quote, the United Nations Security Council resolutions 446, 452, and 465 declare that Israel's settlements in the OPT are illegal according to Article 49, 4th Geneva Convention, notably UN Security Council resolution. The highest judicial authority in Israel, the Israeli Supreme Court, sitting as the High Court of Justice, has recognized the West Bank as occupied territory and recognizes that the Fourth Geneva Convention applies to the occupied territory. Thank you.
I'm going to say what you just said. I have a line of beauty products. It's made of Dead Sea minerals, and it's a very expensive product. In South Africa, it's sold. It's imported by SDV Pharmaceuticals, and it's sold in Wellness Warehouse and in Truitt's. Harbour has no dedicated stores in South Africa. The Dead Sea Laboratories Limited CEO Yaakov Elise lied to the consumers when he stated that Harbour's facilities is located at Kibbutz Mitzpeh Shalem on the northwestern shore of the Dead Sea, just 6 miles north of the Green Line within the area usually referred to as the West Bank. The postal code 86983 refers to Mitzpeh Shalem, located in the occupied Palestinian territories, not in Israel. 45% of DSL stock is owned by two illegal settlements named Mitzpeh Shalem and Kaila. Mitzpeh Shalem owns 37.31% and Kaila owns 7.38%. So while we are against Ahava products, it's a violation of Palestinian human rights. Mitzpeh Shalem and Kaila deprive Palestinians of their land, use water and other resources illegally, and result in curfews and road closures on a regular basis. The army and settlers are violent towards the Palestinians on a regular basis in violation of international law.
I think my comrade is very nervous, Comrade Chair, as you can hear. She's the first time in Parliament, and she forgot to introduce herself. She's Mkita Boy, and also Lungisa Mdende, and my colleague Ibrahim Hassan. You see, I forget people's names too. I'm getting a little bit old. So one of the things that Mkita, in her nervousness, forgot to translate was that what we've asked for is that the label of Ahava in South Africa says product of Israel, when it is in fact the product of illegal Israeli settlements in occupied Palestinian territory. And Lungisa has laid a complaint on Open Shahada Street's behalf with the National Consumer Commissioner, which we're waiting for an outcome from. To ensure that the product is properly labeled and that South African consumers will have a choice. So that's just to finish on that question. Comrade Lungisa has made very clear what Open Shahada Street's position is, and we would like to see a discussion with the other side here, because their arguments could be answered very effectively. And so we hope that at the next engagement that there's a further possibility to have also the South African Zionist Federation, if they welcome, and the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, because we are not afraid of their arguments. We believe that our arguments are just. I want to speak of three things and also about what South Africa can do. At the outset, our government has already recognized the state of Palestine. So the question is not our recognition. The question is what we do to achieve it. I want to first speak of my own personal experience and also research that we've provided to the committee, a whole bunch of details there. But if you would permit me one digression, I want to remind this House that during apartheid, we have given every member of the committee a book, so we're declaring for the register on the record that we're giving every member a copy of this book called The Unspoken Alliance. And in it, it details incredibly the collaboration between the Israeli Defense Force and the old apartheid Defense Force, and how the Israeli generals and the apartheid generals collaborated to bomb Lebanon, to bomb Angola, to bomb our people generally, and how the Israeli army armed every South African soldier with an Uzi machine gun, which was used to occupy our townships. And this gives you the incredible detail of that program. And I would ask every member to, when they deal with the state of Israel, to remember that it is a state that is morally compromised, that it is lied, deceived in every possible way to avoid the creation of a just solution for the people of Palestine and for the people of Israel itself. I want to speak about what has happened recently in a village called Nabi Saleh on the West Bank, occupied West Bank. Two-thirds of the land of that village has been occupied by settlers since 1977, when Anwar Sadat went to make peace. That village has 500 people. The settlement now has 1,000 people. A couple of months ago, the settlers tried to take over a well, and have taken over a well, a spring with which the kids use for recreation, that is privately owned by one of the Palestinian people. The village decided to resist. Every Friday after Jumu'ah prayers, the community goes and protests against the settlement and the stealing of land, the destruction of olive trees and so on. In that village, 78 out of 500 people have been arrested. 78 out of 500 people have been arrested. In addition, in January this year, the Israeli Defense Force raided every single household and took every young boy child from the age of 6 and every adult male and photographed them, and ensured that they had their name and ID. This is in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. I was there in January when this was happening. In addition to what happened subsequently, is 2 weeks later they came back and they arrested a number of minors. At least 10 minors were arrested and kept awake at night, not allowed to sleep, not allowed to see their lawyers. Now let me explain to you the difference between apartheid South Africa and Israel. It is not, I wouldn't call Israel an apartheid state. I would say that it is worse than apartheid was. Because, and it is an apartheid state. Let me explain why I say this. The settlers in Israel, in that same village called Halamesh, the settlement village, if a settler is arrested, they are charged under Israeli laws. Their children are recognized as children until they're 18. Palestinians become adults at the age of 16. That means a child of 17 and 18 can be put into jail as an adult. And I welcome the agreement that has said that all children will be released now. But we know that tomorrow and the next day more children are going to be arrested. We know that children are going to throw stones. And I want to challenge anyone who tells me stone throwing is a violent act. I was a stone thrower myself. So in relation to what has happened with the children, let me quickly give you the example of Islam Tamimi and what happened to him. He was interrogated without his parents' presence, 14 years old. Four huge Israeli soldiers, and we have all this on video. They take much of everything they do on video. So this is on video. We can pray it for MPs if they wish to see it. And it's in Hebrew and we can translate it. What they then do is his lawyer is the police station, and they deny the lawyer access to see him. This is unlawful anywhere in the world. A child under the age of 18 in Israel is allowed to have a lawyer and parent present when they interrogate it. He was not informed of his rights to remain silent. In fact, he was told that he has to speak. He eventually signed a confession like only a 14-year-old can do after much coercion. And not violence, coercion. He said that two of his uncles had helped organize the demonstrations, Naji and Basim Tamimi. And that's true that they helped organize the demonstrations. They convinced him to say that he set up committees for them to throw stones. We work with the Palestinian, the Popular Struggle Coordination Committees in the villages. And they have told us, and their position is very clear, that they don't support violence. But they allowed defense of their children when confronted by the soldiers, and the soldiers shoot them and shoot tear gas at them. They provide legal defense for their young people. Now, what happened to that child is that confession was taken as fact. Even if he withdraws that confession, you will remember that under apartheid, if Comrade Sisa was in jail, as he was, and someone made a confession against a confession which incriminated him, and they withdrew it, that was no longer evidence against him. But in Israel, that remains evidence under military law. The military occupier in the Palestinian territory is the lawyer, the legislator, the military is the parliament, the military is the judge, the military is the prosecutor, and the military is the policeman. And all these people tell us about Oslo. It was a compromise, and I believe it was a very bad compromise for Palestinian people. More than 80% of Palestinian land is still controlled by the Israeli military behind the 67 borders. And that is under the agreement of Oslo. So when we speak of two states, every settlement has to be removed. Every settlement has to be removed. When we speak of two states, East Jerusalem should become the capital. When we speak of two states, there should be free movement of people and goods. At the same time, we understand the security concerns of Israeli people. I was in West Jerusalem standing at the market, and a few weeks later, a bomb was planted there. And it could have hit any human being, and that is wrong. I believe Palestinians have a right to resist and to even to use arms to resist when they're attacked by this is my personal view, when they're attacked by the army within the occupied territories. I do not believe that attacking civilians is right. So let's just get that out of the way before I'm accused of, when I say Palestinians have a right to armed self-defense, that I support bombing. I do not support bombing, and neither does Open Charter Street. But to come to the conclusion of this, this led to the indictment of a man called Basim Tamimi. He's indicted for having given workshops to young people to explain to them that they have the right to remain silent when detained. He's been indicted for organizing demonstrations. In the Israeli military courts, it has a 99% conviction rate. I wish that were true in South Africa. Our courts have what percentage of conviction rate, Comrade Smuts? Sheryl? We're not as lucky in South Africa. The Israeli military courts have a 99% conviction rate because most people choose to plead guilty because they stay a longer time in jail awaiting trial than actually for the sentence that they would receive. Basim Tamimi has refused to plead guilty. His wife, Nariman Tamimi, has been sprayed with skunk. You know, we were sprayed with purple dye. They use water cannons to spray skunk on people. Does anybody here know what skunk is? It is dirty water. It is water that smells like sewage. It is water that the Israeli military tells us is made of organic materials. And if it is sprayed on you, you smell like someone who has come out of a sewage plant for weeks. His wife was showered in front of me a couple of hundred meters, otherwise I would have been showered too, with skunk. And for any religion or any ethnic group, to be near sewage is to become unclean. But many Muslims, it is a real offense to be dirtied in that way. And not only was she sprayed in skunk, a couple of weeks before, her entire house was sprayed with skunk in the village. So what we want to say to you today, comrade, Mr. Chairperson, Open Charter Street has laid the complaint. We want to ask you what you can do. The first thing we would like you to do is to call the European Union and ask them not to vote against Palestinian statehood. The second thing we want you to do is to speak to the African Union and to ask them to vote as a group, because at the moment Nigeria and Gabon are on the UN Security Council. And I can bet you that the United States is putting pressure on Nigeria and on Gabon not to vote for Palestinian statehood. So we should ask the African Union to take a collective position on that. The third thing I would ask you is to agree with what Tahir Sema said, and that is that this Parliament should debate boycott, divestments, and sanctions. It must debate, not should, must debate, because we know the Israelis get away from what should. So we don't want Parliament to get away. It must debate the question of boycott, divestment, and sanctions. The Palestinian Authority has called for the boycott of all settlement goods. And we, in this regard, wish to draw your attention to negotiations between us and the Ministry of Trade and Industry. The Ministry of Trade and Industry has taken submissions from us that all products that are made in Israeli settlements should carry the label product of illegal Israeli settlement made in occupied Palestinian territory. And we would urge the Parliament to make sure that the Minister has no threats, no diplomatic pressure, no other forms of pressure, financial or so on, from the lobby that supports the occupation. And to make sure that that notice becomes law in South Africa. Because if it doesn't become law, the next thing that can happen is China can dump goods on us, say, made in Malawi or made in South Africa. And South African consumers should have the choice. We would also ask you to ask our ambassador in Ramallah and our ambassador in Tel Aviv that they should observe the trial of Bassem Tamimi and of other Palestinian political prisoners. They should visit the villages and meet with the people and show solidarity. It is not enough for us to take a position of only supporting the government. We have to support the government and its people. We would like also, Comrade Chair, finally, we would like to ask the South African Parliament to arrange a solidarity visit, to go and see directly for yourselves, not a propaganda visit that the South Africa-Israel Forum organizes for our members of Parliament, not that sort of propaganda visit, but a genuine solidarity visit where you can meet dissenters in Israel like Breaking the Silence, Mikhail Manikin, a soldier, an Orthodox Jewish soldier who documents what the Israeli army is doing within villages and within Israel itself, so that you can meet people like Jonathan Pollack, an Israeli who works in the occupied Palestinian territories, and see what happens, so that you can meet Muhammad Khatib and many other people, Nariman Tamimi and her children. So from our point of view, we want you to go there and to show solidarity. And I hope that DERCO will give you the budget to do so. If you want us to pressure them and to toy, please send us the message. The last question is on behalf of the Russell Tribunal Committee in Cape Town. We've put in the package the invitation for the MPs, and we hope, Chair, that you would be able to attend yourself the Russell Tribunal. The Russell Tribunal will be discussing South Africa and Israel as an apartheid state, and freedom for the Palestinian people. And it will be opened by Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who I hope we all say happy birthday to. And also, just to add on to that, a range of South African people and international legal experts will be given evidence, including John Dugard and Comrade Zwelin Zimavavi. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you very much for the open shada. There was a, I had, I missed it, honorable members. The ICOSA delegation had indicated that they wanted to use some of their time for the video presentation. I missed it. It's not going to be long. It's a 5 minute, 7 minute at the most presentation.
Chairman, honorable members, thank you for your time. In the next few minutes, I'll just show you a few pictures on the claimed, and I'm saying again, claimed terrorists of Palestine, as the Israeli government and media all the time propaganda say about, to the people. Meantime, I will show you some examples of the what happened at the, for one sector in Palestine, which is, I believe, is very important, is the education sector, as being one of the basic needs for any society in the world. But before I go into that, I just want to warn that there are some disturbing scenes that you will see here. Unfortunately, you will see it because it's the reality. That's what's happening in Palestine. That's what's happening for those, as you can see the faces, those terrorists who attack the Israelis by one word, who stand in front of a Merkava tank, the most powerful tank in the world, holding one thing, holding a Palestinian flag, holding a Palestinian freedom to the Palestinian prisoners. I decided what to talk. First, to give you an overview about the losses in the attack on Gaza, which happened in December 2008, and then I will just focus a little bit on the education sector, because I believe it's one of the most important sectors for any society. Over all this, for the 22 days, war in Gaza was 1,444 people. Of that, 341 children, 213 women, 116 elderly, 17 medical crews, and 13 civil defense fighters. All types of infrastructure, schools, hospitals, UN organizations, houses, civil houses, all was targeted by those by the sea and the air forces, Israeli air forces during these 22 days. Of the overall damages for the properties, there were 3,169 houses, 89 security compounds, 700 factories and business structures, 45 religion houses, mosques, and 10 government ministry and buildings. I think one of the most comprehensive reports about what happened in Gaza, which every one of you is aware, is the Goldstone report. And I will not go into these details due to the time limit. However, why I want to start with the education. Palestine is a country without the resources. It's pride that the Palestinian capital or intellectual capital is the most and only resource for the economic development and to sustain the Palestinians. If you look at the number of schools targeted in that war or attack,
of 181 government schools, 56 UN schools, 5 private schools, 67 kindergartens, 4 universities, and 2 community colleges. The financial losses during the 22 days are $33 million US. The point, for the schools, I'm saying for just only for the education sector, $33 million US. The total losses for the 22 days was $1.9 billion. Is this the only difficulties or hardships the Palestinians face in Palestine? I'm a student from Palestine. I grew up there. I'll tell you, when I was in the 8th grade, we did study 65 days for the full year. The Israeli all the time intends to close any education institution just to destroy and disturb the Palestinian process of gaining knowledge and to be able, so they won't be able to build their country, they won't be able to build an economy that depends from the Israeli economy. Yesterday I had a call, and Mr. Chairman, you mentioned that the Israeli ambassador did not come for because of the Israeli holiday. Yesterday I was talking over the phone with a friend of mine who is lecturing at the American University in Geneva. It was 4:30 in the afternoon. And he said that the university is empty. Then what's happening? He said the Israelis have a holiday. And the checkpoint closed at 2:30. If the student doesn't cross the checkpoint before 2:30, he must go and look for a place to sleep. He can't go to his town. If the checkpoint closed at 2:30, so that the students in Palestine cannot study, the farmers cannot go to their farm, the teachers and all the businesses cannot move because they have the holiday. I think South Africa, from the education perspective, all the comrades here call for boycotting and sanctions and so on, which I support personally. But one of the major issues that South Africa must be active on, and which happened, I think, 2 months or 3 months ago, is the cut of the relations between the universities of South Africa and the University of Israel. There was a project in water development between the University of Ben Gurion University and University of Johannesburg, which after the Palestinian Solidarities pushed the University of Johannesburg to stop it, and there were a few debates and few meetings about it, they have concluded that this water is stolen from the Palestinian land, and therefore they have stopped the relation with the Ben Gurion University. However, this is one step to end the relation and to stop end the relation with the Israeli institution, because they are all those institutions supporting the Israeli occupation of Palestine. And I think as members of the parliament and representatives of the South African, one of the major duties for you is to really be more active of pushing for stopping all those type of relations between universities of South Africa and the universities of Israel, because this is supporting the occupation of a land which is occupied by other forces. A lot of activities that South Africa can do, such as facilitating for Palestinians to come and study in South Africa, which also a point that can support the Palestinian sustainability over the time. I think this is the only point as a person I wanted to share with you. I would like again to thank you for your time and for the committee.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Honorable members, there's the briefings from the various organizations. At this point, I will allow for engagements, questions, comments, clarity. Honorable Mwanyama.
Well, Chair, I think I must say that the input from the stakeholders here is quite comprehensive. It does actually give us more on what we know about the situation in that area. As people that are directly involved on a daily basis, who have decided to champion and the cause of the people and of Palestine, and it's clear that we have and the basis for us to be in a position to understand much deeper the situation. And I do want to make the point that the situation and that has been taken by South Africa in general has been based on the experience of our own struggle. And my view is that that struggle is based on the right for self-determination and the right for and for the respect of basic human rights as enshrined in our Constitution. And therefore, we cannot waver on matters and of violence, because our Constitution does actually make it very, very clear that there has to be respect for life of people. There has to be respect for dignity of people. And therefore, the people of Palestine deserve that. And South Africa, the position is very clear on that. And therefore, we have to call for, as this portfolio committee, we have to call for and stopping of the killing of people and maiming of people unnecessarily. Now, moving further than that, because I take from the proposition that have been presented to us on matters relating to where to, what is it that we can do as a committee, I think that as we sit here, we cannot be in a position, Chair, to take a position as to what we'll do. Because as members of this portfolio committee, we have to play, much as we have clarity on positions that govern our country, however, we have to play a role in a manner that will make sure that at the end of the day, a solution is found and a lasting solution in that. And that should be our position, and myself, I would urge that we find time then, and having listened and to the stakeholders here, we find time to reflect on our own, as well as also finding time to listen and to other delegation which is not here as well. Because I am sure that even yourselves, you would want South Africa to continue to play the role that it has been playing throughout. And because its position is very, very clear. It's documented right from the beginning. And so for us to be able to play that role, we must move in such a way that we are not compromised as this portfolio committee. Having clarity on our position, but in the manner in which we move, it must be in such a way that we assist the players and the leaders on the ground there. You know, if we take back to what happened in South Africa, if one takes the Constitution of South Africa, it tells you how South Africa has gone through the process of liberation. It tells you in its preamble how South Africa started the process of negotiations, because negotiations was not started only in 1990 during the process of CODESA. It started even before that, as people were fighting on both sides. But there was a common cause of saying that we have to find a common solution at the end of the day. And so that should be the approach, and that whatever that we do, ourselves as the members of this committee, we'll have to take a position that makes sure that we move towards finding solution. I don't want to get into the history of it, because these are things that we can only discuss and on our own when we're sitting as the members of the committee. As of now, I think, Chair, it suffices for us to say we've heard and the colleagues, and we're very clear that there's no wavering on the position of our country. And the only issue is, what is it that we can do, and as this portfolio committee, within the confines of the Constitution and also within the confines of the foreign policy, of course, of South Africa. That would be my take on it, Chair. And however, I do want to emphasize the point that we have to listen to the other side as well, so that when we move forward, we are seen to be moving forward in a manner that is helpful to the situation.
Thank you. Honorable Skosana, and then Honorable Dudley. Sorry.
Yeah, it's fine, I can come up.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also want to echo the sentiments of Honorable Smart Ngonyama, and say that I think it has been good to hear some of these things which were said to us. Not that it is the first time one hears them. I have been involved in this Palestinian question since 1986, during the election of the Palestinian Council. That's when President Arafat was still alive, where he became president. So we have been seized with this matter as long as that. So I want to say that it is good to hear these things, so that we cannot become complacent as members of parliament. We should hear these things so that we bear them in our minds and we are able to reflect. And I think I would not be amiss here if I also say that we need to, as a committee, to reiterate also the position of our government, that South Africa does support a two-state solution in that region. We do say that we need to see an independent state of Palestine. We want to see an independent state of Israel, both these states existing side by side and peacefully. As Honorable Martin Gonyama said, that we would shun violence at that point also. I think we also want to reiterate and support our government's position at the UN, where it did support the bid which was brought by President Abbas to the UN. And South Africa also urged that the Palestinian authorities and Israel go back to the negotiations so that they deal with the content of the of what you have been stating to us. I also want to add one or two things, that while we are there, we also need to, I think, to urge the quartet which is led by the former Prime Minister of Britain, Mr. Blair, that it needs to expedite this, and we need also to criticize it for the delay. Much of the delay really rested on that quartet. It delayed a lot of negotiations. And I think that is why they did, in fact, the United Nations stand up to say that they believe that they need to expedite the negotiations. But also, having said that, I think as we sit here, we should also decry the disunity of the Palestinian people. Because when President Abbas went over there, I mean, I admire his courage, his prudence. He took a risk going there to make that bid. But then the whole Hamas was also criticizing him for that. Now, that is the kind of disunity which has been plaguing the Palestinian people for a long, long time. And that disunity is always being used by the others to move away from negotiations. So I think it is also a good thing, really, to speak to Hamas also, to say, look, we need to unite on this point. We have been talking about this unity of the Palestinian people, that unless it also comes first, then negotiations are going to be difficult to come by. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Sherilyn Dudley. I'd also like to thank everybody for giving us the opportunity to hear your views, and like to say that obviously those visuals were very disturbing, and I have seen them before, and I have also seen many other visuals that give a very different side to the story, and all of it is very disturbing, and we all want to see a solution to the situation. But in terms of the agenda that I received said consideration of the application to the United Nations by the Palestinians for statehood. It should be emphasized that the issue being discussed is not, from our side or from my side, is not the question of the establishment of a Palestinian state, but rather the means being used to achieve this end. Unilateral actions will not lead to peace, but will complicate any peace process, and no one is saying that there should be no state for Palestine, least of all Israel, who is committed to peace and a two-state solution. And if I may, I'd like to just put the position of the ACDC on this issue. But the only way to achieve a true and sustainable peace is through negotiations. A unilateral declaration of statehood violates the basic principle of a negotiated peace. An attempt to force a one-sided solution through international pressure is counterproductive and will not solve the conflict. The ACDP calls on the Palestinian leadership and Israel to return to the negotiating table without preconditions so that a genuine and lasting resolution can be found. The South African way is through direct dialogue and negotiation in order to reach peace. The same should be the standard for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and South Africa should lead and advocate this model in this and all conflict solving around the world. All past attempts to import a solution to the conflict from outside have failed. History has shown that the peace treaties between Israel and its neighbors were made possible by negotiations between the parties. In this case as well, peace will only be achieved in direct negotiations. Even if a resolution regarding a Palestinian state is reached in the UN, the Palestinians will not be able to avoid negotiating with Israel if they wish to achieve peace. None of the core issues, including borders, Jerusalem, refugees and water, will be resolved by a UN resolution. A unilateral declaration of Palestinian statehood undermines all internationally accepted frameworks for Mideast peace. The UN Security Council resolutions 242, 338, 1850, the roadmap quartet statements, which call for a mutually negotiated and agreed resolution of the conflict and which have consistently rejected unilateral actions. This view has recently been reinstated by the quartet and endorsed by Israel. A unilateral declaration of Palestinian statehood would violate existing Palestinian-Israeli bilateral peace agreements, most notably the interim agreement from 1995, which expressly prohibits unilateral action by either side to change the status of the West Bank and Gaza prior to reaching a negotiated permanent status agreement. So the ACDP does not support a Palestinian unilateral declaration of independence, but does support the two-state solution. And then just to say that, obviously, just in response to some of the things that had been said, that Israel has stated clearly that they are committed to a quest for peace, and they have a long-proven track record of making strategic concessions for this goal. Now, that's not to deny any of the complex issues that you're facing on all sides. Over the past decades, it has proved its willingness to negotiate land transfers, leaving Sinai for peace with Egypt and leaving Gaza and South Lebanon. And also just to throw in here, in terms of just my simple understanding, that the land of Israel today is a small fraction of what was recognized as the home and birthplace of the Jewish people many hundreds of years before Christ. So there are those kind of things to keep in mind. And in preparation, of course, just to touch on what my colleague here had mentioned in terms of Hamas, in preparation for the unilateral declaration of a state, the Palestinian Authority has signed a reconciliation agreement with Hamas. Not a problem in itself. However, Hamas continues to call for the destruction of Israel and rejects the most basic conditions of the international community for recognition as a legitimate actor in the region. So supporting this agreement without any change in the position of Hamas adds to the problem. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Hold it for a second. Honorable September. Oh, Honorable.
Thank you. Chair, thank you very much. Well, I accept it's unfortunate, the last part that you have heard. From the ANC side, I think our position is extremely clear. I mean, we've had one resolution after another. We've even reaffirmed previous resolutions. And certainly in this parliament, that's the premise that we move from. On our 50th conference resolution, our 51st conference resolutions, and once before 1994 also. I don't need to detail all of them here. It is just very clear what our position is. In Parliament, our position is no different from that which we have taken. You see, if we want to make comparisons, South Africa's liberation was not brought about by us alone. It is incomprehensible to then say to any other country who has had bloodshed for very many years, thank you very much that you've helped us as South Africa to where we are now. We're quite fine and so on. But by the way, you can't have the same dispensation that we have. It is just a mockery of how we were able to get our hard-won freedom and liberation. We had to go to the United Nations ourselves as South Africa to plead with the world to do. The world was able to cause resolutions on ourselves, and the then Southwest Africa, now Namibia, let history not be wiped out conveniently just like that for the sake of whatever else. We must be consistent in how we treat human rights, how we treat violations of human rights, and how, if not for anything else, for the children of the country that we are talking about. If we cannot reach out to the human beings, surely we can't say that the children, they owe it to be suffering in the way that they did. Today in South Africa, we still face the ravages of our past. We have millions of people still unemployed. We have millions of people still not having sufficient water, electricity, and houses. We have a almost two-state thing where our rich are getting richer and the poor becoming poorer. Now, to deny anyone to have freedom from want is absolutely wrong, and we must refrain from that in the best manner that we can do. Chair, I wanted to further speak on the direction that we are taking here. I think it's the right direction that the committee is moving on. And I think, Chair, I want to suggest that maybe we must broaden it a little bit. Because today we received reports from everyone. But there's nothing wrong with this committee having heard what everyone said here. If we want to independently find out a little bit more, which I think is incumbent upon us after listening to everyone, I would suggest there's nothing wrong for this committee to take a view of having a proper public hearing on this matter and then have, because we've agreed earlier on already that there are other parties that did not come and they must be heard. I think we must go beyond that. We must go to the academic institutions, because there were some statements made. We must do our own investigations about a number of things, and invite all of these different parties, because I think our government is doing what it can. Our government needs much more, because we've done very many things. We don't have a solution with the Palestinian people. So that's one avenue. That's what in our realm, that's what the Constitution of Parliament says that we can do. Because what we need to do, Chair, is we must get this report to the National Assembly. This idea of sitting and chatting here and then going away. The structures of Parliament says that there's a National Assembly that must hear reports, and a report must be tabled in the National Assembly about our deliberation, so that the National Assembly, and we should maybe persuade the NCOP, because then it means it's Parliament, must have a view on this matter. I want to equally say, Chair, that there was a debate in this House on this issue. Well, of course, the debate degenerated into a support for ANC and anti-support for ANC, which was sad for the people of Palestine because we were so narrow in our approach that we bothered with ourselves here and instead of the actual people. That report, Chair, that was dealt with in Parliament, we must find out the coming IPU that is sitting, I don't know when, Comrade Sisa, they're leaving tomorrow. We must find out, because this is one of the agenda points of the IPU, and we have debated this thing in Parliament, and those views that we have debated must go to the IPU, and the IPU must once again do what it does, and that is when parliaments of the world congregate, parliaments of the world must take a particular position. Once I was in an IPU meeting, and I had the thrill of voting against America in that IPU when they came with position. So the IPU might have well found themselves in that situation again, but that's why there's an IPU. I think equally so, our delegates that are permanent delegates that are in the Pan-African Parliament, thank you, equally so, we should find out whether this matter, because somebody made the suggestion that we must approach the AU. Now, the AU for us would be the Parliament, our Pan-African Parliament that needs to do that. Chair, lastly, may I just find out the following? We must confer with the trade and industry on this matter that was raised by Zaki and them, but I want to find out, on this issue that you are raising, why have you not approached the international body on intellectual property? Because this is more intellectual property matter than what you have raised, because none of us in the world are allowed to say that this dress that I'm wearing is made by whatever. We are all countries are protected by a particular, so I want to find out, because that's where the other committee could assist in the intellectual property, the WIPRO, I think is their name, of finding out what that is. And lastly, to Kosatu, I'm not sure the International Trade Union Federations, whether they've made any other international submissions anywhere, and if so, what those submissions are and were. And then I think if I can ask, if the statement that Kosatu released the other day, would you mind, this is a personal, would you mind sending a copy of that statement, because it was an extremely balanced statement that spoke about everyone. They didn't criticize the one for the other one. So I think it will be helpful. I can talk again. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nchikala.
Thanks very much, Chair. As someone who's been embroiled in this Palestinian solidarity work, I didn't even want to say anything, honestly. I just came to listen as he invited me, because out of all my years of solidarity work on the Palestinian cause, when the drive for statehood came, you know, I jumped with joy. I said, what took them so long? Because it seems it's a very powerful weapon that if harnessed, political weapon too, that if harnessed properly, it can actually bring the desired solution. We're all South Africans here, and we know how difficult and blare and vague it was at the time when we're just moving from fighting apartheid during the Desert Days towards the ushering in of the current political dispensation. I support what Comrade Konya said, you know, 1,000%, and I support what the other two speakers have said. Unfortunately, Honorable Dudley, I don't know, through you, Chair, which records of history does she have? I'm not a scholar of the Palestinian situation, but I know there's undisputable information about how the political configuration in that area, you know, has assumed the current shape, and is records that are not disputable. And maybe, you know, just as a conclusion, the most important issue is this committee, amongst other things, will be seized with the responsibility of ensuring that the Parliament of South Africa contributes to ensuring that leadership for a solution and a viable and a sustainable solution in Palestine, you know, becomes a reality. And this committee, on behalf of the Parliament of South Africa, of course, linking up with counterparts in the National Council of Provinces, will also be seized with the responsibility of ensuring that we rise above, you know, parochial visions, parochial views, because this is an opportunity to bring about a solution without a single bullet. I speak with authority, you know, Chair, because I pledge solidarity, you know, with the Palestinian cause at the time when, even in South Africa, the armed struggle was at its height. And this is where we are, and here is an idea that's coming. And I think through you, Chair, I would really appeal to the ACDP to review its position, because it's confusing. You know, at no stage in time have I ever heard anyone saying that there will be a unilateral declaration of statehood in Palestine. Why should it be taken to a multilateral platform, the United Nations? The United Nations is not a unilateral platform. It's a multilateral platform. Any resolution that comes there has got to get an endorsement of either the majority of or everybody. How does unilateralism come in? The records are there as to how each of the two groupings, or Israel on one side and the Palestinian on the other side, how have they conducted themselves in the conflict from 1947 or whatever up to now. And I find it difficult for anyone to say Israel has been conducting itself honestly and with in integrity. I'm sure I would welcome that that kind of history be shared with us. We're leaders here. Let us be quite honest, because we're on the verge of making a breakthrough to 6 decades of doom and gloom. Because as you know, all honorable members, once in the TV it comes up, you see these young boys, you know, throwing stones. You say, oh, what now? You're so saturated with it. And this approach has really brought in a breath of fresh political air to say, let us look at something that would even bring Israel closer. I think, Chair, that's the emphasis, that let us provide that leadership, you know. Let's draw from the lessons that we had in South Africa. I'm sure, comrades, you remember at the verge of coming to a position that let's stop the armed struggle, how much resistance was there amongst us. Underground operatives, let alone the MK cadres themselves, the soldiers, the freedom fighters, underground operatives. We frowned at it, and I wasn't clear. What should we do? What are we trusting? What if? But through the leadership of Mandela and the rest of the leaders, Tambo and others, they prevailed. They made us visionaries. And this is what we should be sharing. It's not going to be easy. Sorry, Mangashumayeli. But all I was saying is that that's my penis contribution, and I'm sure we will steer this, you know, and make sure that through this committee it goes into the plenary and things. And obviously, one other thing we should make sure we appeal across party lines is to avoid the repeat of what Comrade Konya said, because it was an ugly scene. It turned out to be attacking the African National Congress and things, because it's known the relations of the African National Congress and the Palestinians. But so what? What we want is a viable solution in Palestine, as we have seen in our country.
Just on the point, okay. And just point of privilege. I want to appeal to my colleagues from the ANC in particular. This is an international issue of concern and also a national issue, and for all progressive organizations. There is no party that actually will be put on the pedestal on this issue. We're supposed to be speaking as one. And therefore, it is also important that we don't go back, because some of us, we don't know what was happening at the time. Right now, we're trying to move together. I'm just appealing, Chair.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Point noted. What I will do, because I think I have two comments quickly to make, but I will give each of you 1 minute. Now, please listen to me very carefully, because I don't want to be stopping you in the middle of your sentence. I don't want you to engage, because the honorable members will not have a chance to respond. So if you raise an issue, or in fact, if you respond to some of the views here, it will then only be fair for me to grant an honorable member the chance to respond if he doesn't agree with. So I don't want that. So please, all I want you to say to do is to basically just close 1 minute, within 1 minute, please.
My close would have some comments on honorable member Dudley. So can I do so? I mean, there was
that's exactly what I don't want you to do.
Okay. So let's put it in a statement. I'm not looking even at here. I'm putting a statement.
Proceed.
Thank you so much for all of your comments. I have very few comments, and I promise you it's not personal at all. Firstly, there were some historical statements that were absolutely incorrect. The first statement is, which country is the biggest Muslim country in the whole world? It's Indonesia. Does that have the right that Indonesians will go to Saudi Arabia and say that we are the biggest Muslim community and we are going to invade your country and we're going to stay here? That's not true. The Palestinians themselves, they have Jewish community. And these Jewish communities, like in Nablus and other cities, they have the right to stay there and they have the right to be part of the society. But to bring outsiders and say that this is my country, that's not true. And most of the current Jewish community there that they are here, they actually were from the Middle Ages. Now, only recently, they have turned into Judaism. The second very quick point, 40% of Israel's arms sales were exported to South Africa during the apartheid period. And all of these facts you will see from this unspoken alliance. It's an excellent, excellent, excellent book to show you what Israel means. The last comment is the Israeli admission into the United Kingdom, into the United Nations was unilateral. When Israel went in 1948, they didn't sit with a committee of countries around the Arab world and said, please, can I negotiate with you in order to be Israel? It didn't happen. So why are you denying this fact for Palestine? Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members. I'm largely covered with regards to responding to anything in specific, but as the honorable member Jikalana had raised, I would get into touch with her with regards to the statement she spoke about, and honorable September, the statement that she had spoke about. Now, the statement was largely used to put together my address to this portfolio committee as well. So much of what honorable members heard me say in my address was the very same statement or similar concerns or issues in the statement that honorable September had made mention of. I think apart from that, I'm largely covered, and it would suffice to say that we are looking to Parliament to lead on this question, and we would be watching various processes very closely and hope to interact with the committee on a more regular basis. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Again, I want to say thank you to everyone for giving us the opportunity to present, and I really think it would be good to have further public hearings, to do your own investigation, to undertake all the work that is necessary to ensure that there is a free Palestine, and to ensure that the question of the refugees, the Palestinians inside Israel, are all resolved. I also want to say very urgently, the application to the United Nations is about borders in the end. The borders are decided for two states. The United Nations has long ago recognized the 1967 borders. Every country in the world has recognized the 1967 borders. And so from that point of view, it's not unilateral. It is simply making sure that Israel can negotiate from a position where it recognizes what the world already recognizes. Then to come to the question of intellectual property, we have checked it out. We've had legal advice from our side, and the DTI has had approached the International Trade Commission, and they have said that no country is allowed to mislabel a product. The European Court of Justice has made a ruling in February last year. It made a ruling which stated the following, that Israel goods made in occupied Palestinian territories cannot claim duty-free under the free trade agreement between Israel and the European Union. So there is serious international precedent on it. And in terms of our law, it's very clear that Israel is flouting international law on this question.
Thank you very much. I can't allow other. Let me just close this meeting, honorable members, by saying a thing or two. You see, that's always the disadvantage of a chairperson. You never get to participate in the discussions themselves. So you get to use the closing remarks to say whatever you want to say. I honorable members, I think to begin with, this, I think, really, in fact, I'm convinced that this is probably the moral issue ever to face this country. There's a lot of others. But the protracted nature of the suffering of the people of Palestine, and mind you, these have been people with whom we've been sharing the trenches in our own fight against apartheid domination. And so we must remain committed as a country to this cause, honorable members. History will judge us harshly if we let down the people of Palestine. Now, you see, to me it's a bit ironic, honorable member, and I would love us to have this peremptory discussion outside further. But to understand what these strategic concessions are that Israel made, that still leaves Israel with 78% of the land, in their hands, in their control. It leaves the Palestinians still without civil liberties. The Palestinians, in spite of whatever strategic concessions that have been made, are still people in their own country, no citizenship. The homes, villages of Palestinians are destroyed on a daily basis. What are these strategic concessions, that have benefited the people of Palestine thus far? So I think that this needs further debate, and I am convinced, honorable members, that we must have that engagement with especially whoever else can come, but especially the representatives of Israel and Palestine, so that we hear their views as well on these matters. Yes, indeed, this report cannot and must not stay here within the committee. We gather dust in Parliament's archives. once we've completed this process, we will have to submit a report to the House for the House to take a resolution and either support or not support this bid, and also outline the actions, how it going, what form that support is going to take place. Because to stand on a platform and shout, you know, we support Palestine is one thing, I mean the Palestinian people is one thing, but to get down to the dirty work and support and show that support and solidarity, by the way, the same solidarity that we benefited from when things weren't going well in our own country. So I'm saying, honorable members, that is certainly a process that we must follow. We will engage with this matter further and have other role players as well to hear their thinking on this matter. Let me at this point thank the representatives of the various organizations present, COSATU, Open Shahada, and IKOSA, for your participation. What you have said here today will certainly feed into further engagements, discussions on this particular matter. Hopefully you will see your views and so on taken on board in the final recommendations to the House when the House is asked to pass a resolution. Let me also thank all the other people and organizations that attended today's proceedings. We value your attendance of this very important debate. Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned.